Well, last week Micah had shared a lesson about the plagues of Egypt, and I really appreciated just those parallels of Jesus setting us free from specific sins and delivering us from our Egypt. And it kind of happened that Mabel and I were already reading through Exodus, and it lined up perfectly with the lesson last week. And so we were reading, continuing to read on through there, and our thoughts were on New Testament parallels to the Israelites being saved out of Egypt. It also kind of led me to be thinking about a much needed focus and study for myself. Just a personal thing that I've been needing to recognize and overcome, an area of like a struggle or a temptation that I've been being pressed with, kind of can be, depending on which perspective you look at it, it's hard to narrow down to one thing. I've been trying to understand how to deal with stress or responsibilities, this idea of maybe being worried about things, or sometimes that can lead into being impatient or being inflexible with when schedules change or things don't go our way. I really appreciate that song, "In Acceptance Lies Peace," because I feel like that speaks a lot of things that I need to really take to heart. But I also think all of these words could kind of be come down to, you could say it's complaining. And so it really ties in with the story of the Israelites as they were saved out of Egypt, and so that's what I wanted to spend some time thinking about today, and then end with reading a chapter that God gives them before they enter the Promised Land. And one thing I wanted to mention is to recognize that the Israelites are not an example. Their example is something that we don't follow. We have to learn from their example, because they didn't make it into the Promised Land, and so we have to recognize their mistakes and overcome them so that we don't act like them. I had one thought that's kind of separate, but I thought I'd share it. Some of the parallels, I was thinking of Moses, the plagues that Moses had brought in Egypt, how we have a much greater, a superior leader, where Jesus came and brought plagues of destruction on the Egyptians. Jesus brought miracles of life to the Jews. Like Moses turned the Nile to blood, and Jesus turned water to wine. Moses brought disease and disease to livestock and boils on the people, and Jesus healed people's sicknesses. Moses brought hail on the Egyptians, and Jesus calmed the tempestuous storm. Moses brought locusts that destroyed their food. Jesus multiplied their food to feed 5,000 people. Moses brought darkness on the land, and Jesus, the light of the world, gave sight to the blind. Moses brought death to the firstborn, and Jesus, the Passover lamb, raised people from the dead. So with that in mind, I want to take more earnest heed with this new covenant that we have, that we don't follow the same errors. So I wanted to start by just thinking right after the Israelites fled out of Egypt, I noticed something kind of interesting, and I'll just mention it in Exodus 13:17. It says that God led them, I'll just read it. It says, "Then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here with you. So they took their journey from Succoth and camped in Etham at the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. I thought that was a neat parallel that I think God gives new believers in Christ. God's graciousness that he didn't lead them immediately out of Egypt to face war, but he wanted to bring them away that he could lead them and teach them. And I think that's something that God gives a new believer, like a time of refuge to grow and learn, where they can be nurtured before maybe they're faced with bigger challenges and battles. Then right after that is the Red Sea crossing, which I'm sure we're all familiar with, but I just wanted to set it as a backdrop for my question for some of the boys to have some input. Here God just works a really strong deliverance, a very amazing story of God crushing the Egyptians in the Red Sea. Moses is able to declare, stand still and see the salvation of God. And the Red Sea crossing we can look at is like a type of baptism for Christians, where God does a work and frees us and sets us free from our past. And at this point, the Israelites were very thankful. They were able to sing a song in Exodus 15. They're able to sing a song of thanksgiving and thankfulness that God wrought them a big victory. So in our lives, I know it's easy to have a good start of thankfulness and rejoicing for all the good things that God gives us. And we should always have that state of thankfulness. But something went wrong for the Egyptians. Right after, it just seems like sin after sin that the Israelites forget the goodness of God. So I wanted to just ask for some input from some of the boys, if we could just go through the time after God has set them free from Egypt, the Red Sea crossing. What were some of the ways that the Israelites sinned against God? And anyone is welcome to just list any ideas they have, specific examples where the Israelites sinned. Peter Jr.? They whined. About what? Do you have a specific thing they whined? Or food? That's right. Nehemiah? They got too much manna. They didn't obey his specific command. That one's kind of interesting because they complained they didn't have food, and then when God gave them food, they turned that into a sin. Anyone else have any thoughts? Timothy? That's right. Idolatry, they made a golden calf. I had kind of listed out the things that I kind of just flipped through the next few books of the Torah, and it's kind of interesting. About six of them were complaints or whining about food or water, that just about the majority of Israelites' sins were dealing with complaint. They complained about bitter water. The same chapter as they were singing that song after the victory of the Red Sea crossing, they complained because they found water, but it was bitter. So I thought that was interesting. Six of them were about food or water. There was some complaints about the leadership that God had set over them. The Korah rebellion, and also Aaron and Miriam spoke against Moses at one time. There was a complaint about the manna. Again, they called it worthless bread, and that was the incidence of the bronze serpent, where God brought a plague on them on account of that. I guess one final one that wasn't mentioned was Israelites intermarrying with the Moabites, or the sin of that Balaam and Balak had caused Israelites to sin. What I kind of wanted, or what my thoughts have gone to, is we have everything that we have, God has given to us freely, and our health, our possessions, our experiences of daily life, what can we look to in our lives that wasn't a free gift from God, and how much that should make us realize that we have no right to complain, we have no right to feel like our circumstance is unfair. And in the chapter that I want to read Deuteronomy 32, which is a song that God gives Moses when they're about to go into the promised land, and God predicts that the Israelites would turn yet again and sin against God. It mentions that they would turn, sort of like they would have received so many good gifts from God that they would then forget him. And they would turn to idols. It made me think that maybe one of the roots of idolatry could be that if we complain and we lose our satisfaction and pleasure in God's goodness, that maybe it could cause us to look to other things and find our satisfaction elsewhere. And that's maybe the root and the start of idolatry, which was kind of a sobering thought to me. So I'll go ahead and just read Deuteronomy 32. I think it was a warning to the Israelites, but I think we could find parallels of it being a warning to us as Christians. "Give ear, O heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth. Let my teaching drop as the rain, my speech distill as the dew, as raindrops on the tender herb, and as showers on the grass. For I proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. He is the rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are justice, a God of truth and without injustice. Righteous and upright is he. They have corrupted themselves. They are not his children because of their blemish, a perverse and crooked generation. Do you thus deal with the Lord, O foolish and unwise people? Is he not your father who bought you? Has he not made you and established you? Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask your father and he will show you, your elders and they will tell you, when the Most High divided the inheritance to the nations, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the boundaries of the peoples according to the number of the children of Israel. For the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob is the place of his inheritance. He found him in a desert land and in a wasteland, a howling wilderness. He encircled him. He instructed him. He kept him as the apple of his eye, as an eagle stirs up its nest, hovers over its young, spreading out its wings, taking them up, carrying them on its wings. So the Lord alone led him, and there was no foreign God with him. He made him ride in the heights of the earth, that he might eat the produce of the fields. He made him draw honey from the rock, and oil from the flinty rock, curds from the cattle, and milk of the flock, with fat of lambs, and rams of the breed of Bashan, and goats with the choicest wheat. And you drank wine, the blood of the grapes. But Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. You grew fat, you grew thick, you are obese. Then he forsook God who made him, and scornfully esteemed the rock of his salvation. They provoked him to jealousy with foreign gods. With abominations they provoked him to anger. They sacrificed to demons, not to God. To gods they did not know, to new gods, new arrivals that your fathers did not fear. Of the rock who begot you, you are unmindful, and have forgotten the God who fathered you. And when the Lord saw it, he spurned them, because of the provocation of his sons and his daughters. And he said, I will hide my face from them. I will see what their end will be, for they are a perverse generation, children in whom is no faith. They have provoked me to jealousy by what is not God. They have moved me to anger by their foolish idols. But I will provoke them to jealousy by those who are not a nation. I will move them to anger by a foolish nation. For a fire is kindled in my anger and shall burn to the lowest hell. It shall consume the earth with her increase and set on fire the foundations of the mountains. I will heap disasters on them. I will spend my arrows on them. They shall be wasted with hunger, devoured by pestilence and bitter destruction. I will also send against them the teeth of beasts with the poison of serpents of the dust. The sword shall destroy outside. There shall be terror within for the young man and virgin, the nursing child with the man of gray hairs. I would have said, I will dash them in pieces. I will make the memory of them to cease from among men, had I not feared the wrath of the enemy, lest their adversaries should misunderstand, lest they should say, our hand is high, and it is not the Lord who has done all this. For they are a nation void of counsel, nor is there any understanding in them. Oh, that they were wise, that they had understood this, that they would consider their latter end. How could one chase 1,000 and two put 10,000 to flight, unless their rock had sold them and the Lord had surrendered them? For their rock is not like our rock, even our enemies themselves being judges. For their vine is the vine of Sodom, and the fields of Gomorrah. Their grapes are the grapes of gall, their clusters are bitter, their wine is the poison of serpents, and the cruel venom of cobras. Is this not laid up in store with me, sealed up among my treasures? Vengeance is mine, and recompense. Their foot shall slip in due time, for the day of their calamity is at hand, and the things to come hasten upon them. For the Lord will judge his people and have compassion on his servants when he sees that their power is gone and there is no one remaining, bond or free. He will say, where are their gods, the rock in which they sought refuge, who ate the fat of their sacrifices and drank the wine of their drink offering? Let them arise and help you and be your refuge. Now see that I, even I, am he, and there is no God besides me. I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal, nor is there any who can deliver from my hand. For I raise my hand to heaven and say, as I live forever, if I whet my glittering sword and my hand takes hold on judgment, I will render vengeance to my enemies and repay those who hate me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood, and my sword shall devour flesh, with the blood of the slain and the captives from the heads of the leaders of the enemy. Rejoice, O Gentiles, with his people, for he will avenge the blood of his servants and render vengeance to his adversaries. He will provide atonement for his land and his people. So Moses came with Joshua, the son of Nun, and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people. Moses finished speaking all these words to all Israel, and he said to them, set your hearts on all the words which I testify among you today, which you shall command your children to be careful to observe, all the words of the law. For it is not a futile thing for you, because it is your life, and by this word you shall prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to possess. I thought, if Jesus was to leave us a song of witness to us, what kinds of things would it say in it? And I think there already are some warnings like that that will be a witness to us in the New Testament. And I just want to take heed to those things and not follow the example of the Israelites. Appreciate any more comments, corrections, or input from brothers.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting. There's variation to this passage in verse 8. But I think it's interesting that I've seen some early Christians talk about it as being the more authentic one. Verse 8 here, where it says that the Most High apportioned the nations according to the number of the tribes of Israel. We talked about that a bit when I was in Israel. It's a pretty controversial passage. I think the Jews, the ancient tradition with the Christians was the manuscripts that said that he numbered them according to the number of the angels. I just thought I'd point that out. That's kind of interesting. I guess the other thing I thought I would add too, and I appreciate what Brother Daniel's shared today, is Hebrews chapter 3 actually pointing to exactly what Daniel is talking about as being a warning to Christians. Yeah, it's a pretty sobering chapter. So that was all I wanted to share.
Thank you, Brother Daniel. And as you mentioned, those things are written for our instruction. Romans 15:4, 1 Corinthians 10. An example, as Brother Daniel said, that we won't, the negative, that we won't fall in those ways like that. And thank you, Brother Brett, for that comment. Expound on that, and I can be corrected. But, you know, the angels, I've heard that before. And the angels of the nations, you know who they represent? Well, in the book of Daniel, you know, Gabriel, Michael was fighting over Lucifer, over Persia in Greece. And every country has an angel. And so, believe it or not, we have an angel watching over this country. And so, if you go over that, but that's, he lived in Israel like that. But a couple of points there that none of the children said, you know, of the reasons why God was mad with Israel. But then you read a thing there. It says verse 20. It says, "A froward generation, stubborn children, in whom there is no faith." Henry, this hence. And the land will eat us up like it eats its people up. There's going to be swarms of bees like in Brother Dwayne's mulberry tree. We can't take it. There's giants, unbelief. You know, Joshua and Caleb says, go on. The Lord has given us a hand. But because of unbelief, the children, and they suffered 40 years for that, a day for each year, right? I mean, a year for each day. And the land will eat us up. Oh, mosquitoes and gnats and hornets. And they were just making up stories of unbelief. And now the other verse would be about 43, rejoice in your head, O ye nations with his people. I've avenged the blood of his servants and the servants and the servants on the adversaries. And there's a similar verse, avenging of the apostles and the prophets. And the prophets. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often I would have gathered you like a mother hen gathers a chick, but you wouldn't listen to me. And so, the avenging of the apostles and Jesus, you wept over from Abel to Zechariah. Anyway, thanks, Daniel. A lot of good admonitions. God is love, but he's also a consuming fire. Attitude. The Lord be magnified.
Yeah, thank you. Well, appreciate the thoughts, and my mind just went a little bit on when Daniel was making that comparison between Jesus and I thought, well, God also had said, if you do these things, and that is our warning, that if we do these things, we can escape eternal damnation, eternal judgment, eternal death, if we do what Jesus says. But he brought water out of a rock, out of a desert. He brought water twice out of a rock in the desert. He brought meat in the middle of the desert. And he gave manna every day. That's food, good food, I believe. That was very nourishing, and they complained about it, of course. And those are the dangers that we're in. But then I had to also had and this is also the admonitions we were getting. This Jesus not only taught us what to do, and he gave life, but he also will pronounce death on us someday if we do not walk in his ways. And a choice that we have while we're alive here on this earth right now. We may not have tomorrow. We may not have next year. So let's take these. Let's take example from these people that we do not end up. Those were my thoughts. God bless us.
Brother Walter, yeah, thank you for that. I guess one last thought I had when Daniel started out and he said that what he was saying, that when Daniel, you might have to help me out or someone else, when God gave them too much or he was too good to them, they forgot him and something like that. And I was thinking, I was like, okay, why would that be? Why is it when he gave him some goodness, then they were doing things that were pleasing to him, but when he gave him too much, that they forgot him and turned to iniquity? And it's like, okay, why would that be? And I could see where the tendency would be for all of us human beings that as long as the contrast of various things, good and evil, light and dark, exists in our life, then we appreciate the light, right? I mean, if all we had was love, we never saw or experienced unforgiveness or hatred or anything, that kind of stuff, we probably wouldn't appreciate love and forgiveness as much. And so I think that's the tendency, is when we live, we try to, and I think maybe this is part of Jesus' teachings on voluntary self-denial and taking up our cross, that if we just indulge in all the good things of life, including Jesus' warnings on money and possessions, it's like people will say, well, yeah, we forget God, we don't rely on God, and I just think that's all connected to the same idea. So anyone, if anyone had any other thoughts in that regard, I'd certainly appreciate hearing them.
Amen. And I'm commenting on your good comments. I mean, you know, Solomon, it was Agur who said, two things give me. Don't give me either. Who's the Lord that I may want to serve him? And so the early church was poor and persecuted. And then when Constantine came in, everyone joined the church. You know, the world became the church. And then he started salary. He gave salaries to the preachers. They got a paid income. And you know, that's one of the downfalls and things like that. But yeah, I mean, that's it was prosperity. It ruins the church, so-called back then. The Lord be magnified.
Sarah.